Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Barry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Barry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with someone you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One-on-One, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
To be honored at your university, it really takes my words away sometimes. Like when I think about it, and as this has been going on for you, I go, wow. And then when I saw a rendition of a court, I was like, that's going to be there forever. And I can show my grandkids it. And the players that I coached, I'm so proud of them. And they've shown the love back to me.
And our guest this week is Dick Delaney, one of the best basketball coaches the Delaware Valley has seen. He spent years leading Westchester until his retirement in 2008. Has also coached other sports, one of the really good guys in local sports. And Dick, thanks so much for taking the time.
Thanks, Matt. Nice to see you again.
So you've been retired for a while. What's life like now that you have, about a decade stepped away from the grind?
Yeah, a little bit more than that. I've done some interesting things. I went back to the PSAC. I was the supervisor of officials for 3 years and evaluator of officials. So I had a chance to get back at some of those guys. You know, it makes bad calls on me over the years. But that was fun. I did that. And I worked down at when the park opened down in Chester for the soccer team. I worked down there in games management for a couple of years. We've got our family. Both our boys are living in Arizona. And we've got 3 grandchildren. So Toby, my wife, and I spend a lot of time out there. They're after us to move out there, but it gets a little bit too hot sometimes. And we're East Coast people. We have our roots here. I still do a lot of stuff for the university. We run fundraising for Westchester. We do fundraising. We do events that they want me at to say hello to alumni and so forth. And my wife's been able to be retired with me, and she's become an artist and one that she sells her paintings are good. So we've been busy, you know, with our family and some other projects we have, and it's been okay. I mean, I'm not saying I don't miss game day, but there's a lot of things you have to move on from, and it was time.
Yeah, that was kind of the question I was going to lead up to. Like, how much do you miss the coaching? Like, obviously, life is full, and obviously, you're keeping your hand in Westchester, and you've been able to do other things in athletics. But do you get that game day pull when there's a big game, or when you're watching something, or when you go to a game?
I don't think you ever lose it. I mean, I think your competitive juices, once you've been a competitor, as an athlete and a coach, I think that's always there. I think over the first 4 or 5 years were very tough, I thought. I actually went back to it again with Herb after I had retired from Westchester for a couple of years, and we had a great time. But I think that you just come to the realization that you put your time in. I had 45 years in the business from high school to college, and I was an administrator also. I had some administrative posts. I taught at Westchester some terrific classes, principles of coaching, organization, administration of athletics, which I loved. And I think it's just time you feel, it's time to do other things. And And, you know, the old health thing comes in, too. You know, you have, you know, I had a bad back and I had some surgeries I needed to get done. And you don't miss the things that really aggravate you about your job, like the long bus rides and the maybe the lack of support with some of the things you needed for your program. Not to anybody's fault, not for anybody's fault, just some frustrations that you had for years and years that maybe it's time for me to step away from this and do something else and enjoy this part of life, too. So it's okay.
Now, talking about the impact you had on Westchester, you've got something coming up as we're recording this where you and longtime women's coach Deirdre Kane, you're going to have the court named after you at Westchester right. University. How did you find out about that? And how did that hit you when you heard that news?
Wow, that's an interesting story. I had heard some rumors about 2 years ago. One of my great friends is Ed Rush, the former NBA official. And was a great supporter of ours. Our program went out there. And he had a conversation with Coach Blair, who took my place, one of my great players. And he's a great coach. He's done a wonderful job. And it was just a conversation. And unbeknownst to me, behind the scenes, they had started talks with the administration about it. And this past year, they called me. It was about this time, I guess, and said, we're thinking of naming it. We're going to name the courts after you. You and Deirdre for your time together, and you had 21 years. You coached right next to each other and traveled and so forth. Both of you have made a big impact on the university, and we're going to get this project going. And it was announced. Toby and I were at a opening meeting of Damian's team in September last year, and the vice president announced it there, and I was taken by shock. I heard the rumors. But he officially said, this project's going to go on. We're in the process now of raising money for it, getting support, and we're going to announce it at a game in January and have you and Deirdre there. And they announced it at the game. It was really well received. And since then, it's been amazing. The interest, former players, supporters, I heard last week that the number that are going to attend it on September 14th is 300 people now. And it's going to be a nice event. It's going to be at the court. They have seen renditions of what it's going to look like. It's going to look very nice. And they're going to have like a little cocktail hour and unveil the court. And then I will say a couple words and we'll go on with life. But it's to be able to see that, Matt, it really fills me up because, I came here in 1965 at Westchester and I came from North Jersey. I kind of got here because I wanted to be a coach. And in those days, you know, as an athlete, you weren't really recruited a lot. And I was looking for a physical education school. I was ready to go to Montclair State up in the area where I lived. My father said, let's go down and see Westchester. He goes, Dad, I don't know anything about that. I'm around the corner. I can play my sports. Hopefully, I'll be good enough to play college sports. He goes, no, let's go. But we came down and the people there, the coaches were amazing. I was able to have a really fulfilling athletic career, and then went on to start my career and then was asked to come back to Westchester in 87 by Dick Yoder, the athletic director at that time, and a wonderful man. And to be honored at your university, it's really takes my words away sometimes when I think about it. And as this has been going on for you, I go, wow. And then when I saw a rendition of the court, I was like, that's going to be there forever. And I could show my grandkids it. And the players that I coached, I'm so proud of them. And they've shown the love back to me. So it's been overwhelming a bit.
I can feel the emotion in your voice now. What do you think it's going to be like on September 14th? Are you going to be able to hold it together?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'll hold it together. I'm going to try to make a lot of fun about some things and some jokes about people and players and so forth. Yeah, I'm not going to be heavy. Believe me, I'll be heavy with you but talking about it, but not when I'm there in front of people. It'll be fun. And my personality, hopefully, won't come out again. So I'll be emotional about it when I look at the floor, but I'll be fine.
Have you right. talked to Deirdre?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we talk a lot. Yeah. And she's excited about it. She's an emotional person, too. And she's we used to have a joke. You know, we had to fight a lot for things together, you know, for our programs. And not fight, but just big discussions about it. And I might even tell the story the day of when I get up to talk about her, which I will, of course, mention her, talk about our time together. But we had a good plan. It wasn't really a plan, but Deirdre was a crier. You know, when she wanted something and she couldn't get it, she was, well, you know, she would, and I was more of a yeller. So, you know, between the two of us, we could get what we want maybe sometimes, or at least that's the way we presented things. So we had a good friendship, and we respected each other as a coach and shared plays together. And of course, we had those long PSAC bus rides, which we did together. You know, it's tough to get teams and, you know, going to Slippery Rock and all these places, getting checked in hotels and practice times and everything, meals. And, you know, it's something we had to do, you know, for finances. And of course, you'd rather travel alone in your own bus, but that wasn't the way it was going to be able to be done. So, you know, we made the best of everything. Practice times, we had shared facilities. You know, she finishes, I get on court. And, you know, we just had to work together. And it's nice to have this honor with her, believe me.
And you talked about coming from North Jersey to Westchester. As an athlete, I mean, you were pretty high level across the board, but it seems like in college, basketball was the least of your three. You only played 1 year of basketball, and then you were a student manager, but you were soccer and baseball, you were across the board, right?
Yes, I was. I was able to, basketball was my least prolific sport, but as I was growing up, maybe one of my favorites. You know, in high school, I wasn't really that good a basketball player, but I played all kinds of leagues. And when I got to Westchester, I was thrilled to be able to talk to Mel Lorbach, who was the soccer coach at the time. And he was really excited about me because I had a really good high school career, scoring goals and so forth. And Mel had just won the national championship, Division One, you know, in 1960. And I show up in 1965 with my father that day we visited, and we walk into his office, and I was just so impressed with the man and what he had done at Westchester. You know, we played Army, Navy, I mean, Penn State. We played a Division I schedule across the board, and we were in the NCAA tournament every year. And it was a wonderful career in soccer. And, you know, and being active all year round, you know, I talked to the basketball coach, and he says, you know what, you're a pretty busy guy. You know, you're a soccer player. You've got baseball. You know, you probably, as point guard here, you'd probably make a pretty good center fielder. So I kind of got the message that, okay, but I was always a student of the game. And at that time, in the winter times, there was always leagues to play in around Westchester. I played in the Kearney League there. I played in the Coatesville League basketball. I played in Phoenixville. I always was playing in basketball leagues. I loved it. I love the X's and O's of basketball. I love the effect a coach could have on the game, maybe in that sport more than any other sport, the way it played out. And then, of course, baseball was probably my best sport. And I played for a man at Westchester who's a god, W. Glenn Killinger. And Killy's name's all over the place. He was a dean of men. He was a figure, Matt, that you know, you looked at and you just revered. He had that type of respect, a former Penn State All-American back in the 20s. And he coached everywhere. He played minor league baseball. His career at Westchester was legendary before I got there. A football coach, baseball coach, he even coached basketball for a few years when he was there, and along with being a dean of men and a real mentor to people out there. And we walked into his office when I visited, and it took my breath away, all the stuff on the wall. And this is Glenn Killinger. And I had a letter from my baseball coach, and he said, this is our center fielder. He's done a wonderful job at Rutherford High School, where I grew up. I hope you take a look at him for the baseball team. So he looked at me, and my father happened to know him, not know him, but know of him, because he was from Pennsylvania, grew up in Williamsport area. And Killinger was like a god up there. And he was quite intimidated myself. And he and my dad got in some type of conversation, and I'm sitting there. And all of a sudden, Killy says to me, he goes, stand up for a minute. So I stood up, and he goes, well, you're not very big. I said, no. You know, he goes, are you tough? I said, I think so. And he goes, well, can you take out a second baseman or a double play? I said, yeah, I think so. I can, coach. I can do that. So right from the start, we had a good relationship. I was a good player there, and I was surrounded by really good players too. And probably one of my proudest accomplishments was Killy was getting ready to retire when I was in my senior year, 1969. And I was his last captain at Westchester University. And we had a good year, and it was just a fulfilling goal of mine that ended my career with Glenn Killinger's last year. It was wonderful, wonderful experience. And then I started coaching right away, basketball. I got a job at Great Valley School District in Malvern. I was 22 years old. I was a junior high school coach for a year, and we had an athletic director who was one of the finest men of all time by the name of Al Como at Great Valley. The team had some really hard times in basketball. and other sports. And he kind of took me under his arm, under his wing. And the next year I was at the high school, basketball coaching job was open. I was 23. I coached 1 year of junior high school basketball. He goes, "You're my head coach. I know you can do turn this program around." I said, I'm going to take it. I'm thrilled. Sure. I've been a 23-year-old coach, head basketball coach. People dream about it. Well, I didn't get off to such a good start, Matt. We had a tough year. And he kept encouraging me, "You can do this." And we're in a tough league at the time. You know, we had Coatesville, Westchester. We had Phoenixville, Pottstown, all solid basketball programs. Great Valley was not. And they were kind of at the bottom of the list. So first year, I won one game. And he kept encouraging me. And I kept working the program. We started a summer program. We started a recreation program for the kids to get them more involved in basketball. Second year, we won 7 games. Third game year, we win 12 games. And he was just the greatest athletic director because he just kept encouraging, "You're doing it. You're getting it. You're getting these kids interested. They're playing. And you're building the program." And I was so excited. And then the next year, we win 14 games. Okay. During this time, I had become real good friends with Kathy and Ed Rush. And we were running some camps in the Poconos. This is Immaculata time for Kathy. And we were teaching together. Kathy, she was at Great Valley teaching. General Wayne, actually, in junior high school. And we started a camp up in the Poconos for a week or two. And one of our guest speakers at the time was Herbie Gee. And I had run into Herb at a coach's clinic down in Wildwood. They used to have a great basketball coach's clinic every year. And I went down for the explicit purpose to listen to him talk about zone defense and zone offense. And I had a good kid on my high school team named Eric Schrader, and he could flat out shoot. So it's not a surprise that the other teams would box and want him. You know, so I sat with Herb after one of his clinics down at Wildwood. I said, "You know, help me with this kid, coach. Can I borrow you for like 20 minutes? What do I do against a box of one?" So I gave him some stuff. We got friends. We got to be friends. And then at Poconos, we'd spend days together up there. And then after that year at Great Valley, an opening opened up at Philadelphia Textile. And Walt Chisowitz, the great soccer coach, he was taking the national team at that time. And it was late in the year. And Herb says, "Look, we need a soccer coach. You can coach soccer. You've been very successful. And you and Barry Bardo, we could put that team together and you could take Walt's spot." And Barry was a great player for Textile. He goes, "Be my assistant. And what do you think?" I said, "Well, are you kidding me? Where do I sign up?" So I left and then started my time at Textile, where I, you know, was able to stay involved with a lot of sports. And I loved everyone.
That first year at Great Valley, when you win one game, and I know you're AD's yeah. encouraging you and all, but you're a competitor and you're new to coaching, and I don't want to say it's not working, but you're not winning. Like, you're obviously doing all the right things and you're developing, but at the end of the day, you're not winning. And especially for a young coach, that can be incredibly difficult to swallow, because I would imagine you're not seeing things from the 30,000-foot view that your AD is, and maybe you do more years down the road. So how difficult was that first year? Was there self-doubt? Am I good at this?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and it came after I started. We had the fall soccer season, and we were great. We had a great team. So now, okay, I'm just going to roll this into the basketball season. We're going to turn it around. I came to the quick realization. I think when you're young, you're thinking, you know, you're going to make a big difference. That quick realization is, you better have some good players if you're going to be a good coach. That's the bottom line. And I think as an idealistic young coach, it's like, well, I'm here now, we're going to win. No, this is work. And it was discouraging. I don't know if I would have got through without my athletic director. You know, he kept every day encouraging. And I had such a great relationship with him, Matt, that he used to come to my Westchester games and stayed in touch with me and all the time. One time about my third year, when we were getting good, we're playing Coatesville, never beaten them in the history of the school. Great teams, you know, the Joe brothers, you know, a list of people. And we beat them. And, you know, we slowed the ball down. We did all the things you need to do in the days to win a game, you know, held the ball, made the game shorter. But after the game, we won. And I'll never forget, he comes over to me. He's a big man. And he grabs me. He goes, "Delaney, get up here. Get up here." He grabs me and jumps. I jump in his arms, and he ran around the gym with me. You know, that's the kind of athletic director he was. He was just fabulous. And yes, that he helped me get through that year. And then I got smarter. I learned more. I spent those summers in the Poconos, not only with Herb, but we'd have Rolly Massimino as speakers, Jimmy Wynum as a speaker. I mean, you name it. And Ed would bring in pros. I mean, I saw Jerry West came into our camp, Calvin Murphy. I mean, it was an experience. Kathy was growing with the women's program, obviously the Immaculata, and we were getting a lot of campers, and she would have speakers in, and she was a, you know, she was a pioneer in the women's sports and women's basketball. So it was really an exciting time, but it really did shape me as a coach of realizing what you needed to do to win, you know, get good players. Number one, if you don't have good players, you better make good players, make them better. And that was really eye-opening.
So you coach basketball, soccer, you also coach baseball and tennis. Yes. Am I correct?
You're correct.
And this is across different schools, high school, college. You had your finger in different places, different times, and had success everywhere. I'm curious, do you feel like you were the same coach for every sport? Or do you feel like your approach was different depending on the sport? I mean, obviously you have to focus on different things, but I just kind of mean you and how you came to the table. Do you feel you were the same across the board, or were you different?
I think the way I treated kids and players is the same. I think their environments came into the play as far as their backgrounds and so forth. I mean, the baseball player's background's different maybe than a soccer player or basketball player. But I think my personality and the way I treated kids and players was the same. I love coaching baseball because I'm a good player, and I liked it very much. It's a big part of my life now. As you and I talk about the Phillies a little bit, you know, I follow. But at Textile, we had to build a program. And that's one of the things, Matt, that I am most proud of, and I've talked about it a lot with people I'm close with, is that I really got a thrill out of building programs, of taking them and making them better. And I just a real thrill of that. And baseball at Textile, we needed to build that. And we had our field for the first time. You know, we used to play up at the Henry Avenue, up the road, you know, and play a lot of away games. And we had a Division I schedule. And, you know, when I left there to go to Westchester, we'd gone to the NCAA tournament for the first time. And we had a great following of kids in the city that wanted to come play for us then. That was the hardest decision for me at that time, because I loved Textile. I loved it. I love working with Herb. I love being a baseball coach. And a couple of those years before I coached the baseball team, I was a tennis coach and learned about that. So to answer the roundabout question, I think, no, the players, you know, you find out what makes them tick, what their issues are, how to make them better, how to motivate them. Some of them require different type of motivation, and you have to absorb that as a coach and then lay it out to them, you know. And fortunately, it's kind of worked, you know, over the years.
How did all those different experiences with those different sports, you talk about connecting and stuff, how did all that make you a better coach, as opposed to maybe you just, let's just say you coach basketball for 30 years.
Right.
You know, but you probably, like you said, you're talking to kids from different backgrounds that maybe you didn't see in the basketball world, but you talked to them at tennis. How much did it just kind of round you off as a coach and a person to have kind of access to all those different sports and all the different types of kids that played them?
I think it helped. And people say, like, well, how can you jump around? And you know, as an assistant basketball coach at a Division II school, you got to do a lot of recruiting. Well, I just made the schedule I did. And Herb was very, very encouraging for me to be the baseball coach. And a lot of coaches wouldn't have done that because, you know, you're taking time away from my program. You should be doing this, because I was a worker. I was out there. I was doing it. And I think just being around everyday practice, being around kids, just energized me a lot. And no matter what sport it was, and trying to figure out how we're going to get you better today and how our team's going to improve. And then it just kind of worked. It kind of worked for me. And hey, was I perfect all the time? No, I think your relationships with your players change. I know, hey, sometimes when kids leave programs, whatever they may be that I coach, you know, maybe we had a rift about something. Maybe we had a disagreement. Maybe I had to bench a kid. Maybe I had to cut a kid. But I think that if you try to be honest with them and explain things, that it comes back to like, yeah, I understand that, coach. I get it. You know, or sometimes you're not going to reach them. You know, it's not a perfect thing that happens. It's It's something, a lot of things go into it. And, but I would say for the most part, stuff, events like this, these guys turn out for that I coached, you know, and in summer times, they have get togethers. They invite my wife and I to it. And they seem to like our company there. And we talk about the old days. Like, Coach, remember when you did this, you got mad at me and you suspended me for a game. Yeah, I remember. Yeah, you were right. Okay. Or I don't know if I agreed with you on that one, you know, so. It's a two-way street, you know. You hear their story and how they think that you handle things, and a lot of times it works.
We need to take a break on One-on-One. We will have more with former Westchester University head men's basketball coach Dick Delaney in just a few moments. But right now, there's nothing quite like the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid when it comes to exhilarating efficiency. With hybrid technology and thrilling capability, these vehicles deliver an electrifying performance on every drive. Discover for yourself what truly makes these hybrids special. Redefine your driving experience with Honda, KBB.com's best value brand of 2023. Contact your local Honda dealer today about the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid. And now on One-on-One with Matt Leon, let's get back to our conversation with former Westchester University head men's basketball coach Dick Delaney. For all the sports, did the thrill of game day hit the same for all of them, or was it different feel for the different sports?
No, I was always ready to play. You know, in baseball, I love to throw batting practice. And I just love to get out there before a game, get the team ready, you know, do some hitting, some bunting and so forth, and then get together. And I mean, our pregame day before practice in soccer, we would do some stuff to motivate them, a little fun stuff. In basketball, I would always end my practices. And I did learn this from Herb, too. We had shooting games. We break the team up. And, you know, half of you here, half of you here, we're going to have shooting games. A little prep, you know, we've already gone over the scouting report. We know what we're going to do tomorrow. Here, okay, we're going to have some shooting games now. It was fun. You know, and the kids, we end up practice with the Hail Mary. See who makes a Hail Mary to get points, and losing team runs a suicide or something. Baseball, I equated that to something else, with how many balls in a row you can hit, you know, consistently and break the team up. Always loosen it up a little bit before game day, the day before. But remind them of the message: tomorrow we're ready to play, and this is the way we've already gone over how we're going to do it. And then quickly before the game, you do a quick thing, and that's kind of was the procedure I followed in any sport that I coached.
So you come back to Westchester, I think it's 87, is that correct? That's when you started back. When you come back to your alma mater, somewhere you had such success, does it add pressure as a coach? Because you've kind of got a legacy already there. And if you come back and things don't go well, it can make things kind of weird. Did you feel any extra pressure coming to take over the basketball program at your alma mater than maybe you would have felt if you were just going to another Division II school in the area where it was kind of a clean slate as far as your impact?
Yes, big time. Because the tradition of Westchester athletics didn't start with me. It started way back. And always the teams were always competitive, national champions, some of them, always tough. And yeah, I felt the pressure. You know, I had my old coach, Killy, was still alive at the time. And Killy said to me, "Dick, this job's not going to be easy," because it was the program had gone down for a while. And to nobody's fault, the coach before me was a good coach. The coach before him was a good coach. It just that they needed a little energy. And Dick Yoder was the athletic director that hired me. He was one of my professors when I was there. And we didn't have a lot of money. We had to raise money. We had to do a lot of those things that weren't very easy to do. And it wasn't easy. And I did feel the pressure. But it didn't hinder the way I coached. The first year, I inherited guys that you wouldn't say they would be recruited players. You know, they were there, and I kept a few of them. And I was able to get the job not until May. So I lost the whole recruiting year. But I had lists from recruiting for Herb of guys that were still available. And I got the job on May 15th. On May 16th, I was at Coatesville High School. They had a point guard, Matt, who was about 5'5½", maybe. But he was a dominant player. I saw him play Conshohocken, you know that tournament, what that is. And I just had him in the back of my mind because I was involved with the Westchester job at that time. I said, if I get that job, I'm going out and getting Ricky Hicks right away. Well, I get the job in May. And the next day, I was out at Coatesville. And Ricky was very quiet. He had nowhere to go. but I just loved his heart. And I always recruited, even when I was with her, good point guards. I love the point guard position. And Ricky came, and he changed the whole feeling of the team. He was such a competitive guy. And I built around him and a couple other guys, you know. But yes, the pressure, to go back to your question, I'm rambling a little bit. I did feel the pressure a lot. And every day I felt I was representing the university. That was, you know, even more as a player when I was there. And the history behind Westchester, I did. But, you know, I learned to live with that and enjoy it. Enjoy the pressure of it and enjoy the people that were getting behind me. That was the whole thing, you know, the alumni. Wow, you know, Dick's here. The team's going to get better. And I know he's going to do a good job. Some of the faculty members I had when I was there, they got aboard with me. My old coach, Mel Lorbeck, wonderful coach, he became a fixture at our practice. Because he liked the way we were running practice and what the program was doing. I mean, and Dick Yoder, our athletic director, is wonderful too, as far as the support is concerned. So it worked, you know. And you know, every job's going to have pressure to it, and the pressure is the most is when you put on yourself. And once you learn to deal with that, then you can move on.
When do you feel like you really hit your stride at Westchester as the head coach? Not just the wins, but
right.
Keeping the program where it needed to be, understanding the totality of what the job took. Like, how many years do you feel like it took you before you were really in a good rhythm?
I would say it took the first 6-7 years to really turn things around, get some money situations straightened away with scholarships. Our first breakthrough year was we were knocking on the door for playoffs, and they did, in those days, they didn't include a lot of teams in playoffs. It was like two from the East and two from the West. But in 1994, we won the Eastern Championship, which was huge for us. And the big player on that team was Damian Blair. And we had recruited him from Haverford School. And the recruiting for Westchester, any Division II, because we did the same thing at Textile, even though they had more money, scholarship money. But the whole key was to try to get somebody that slips through the cracks. You know, maybe being recruited by a Division I team, but they're not recruiting really. So we stayed with Damian. We stayed with a couple other guys. And we started, once you get some good players in, other players follow because they want to play with those people. Like Ricky Hicks' presence on the team helped us initially getting off of a good start and getting more players in the team. And Ricky's, you know, he's valuable today to the program. So in 94, that was it. And then 94 till really when I left. The year I left, I had a bad year because I had a ton of injuries and a few other things. But we went through a string of, I think it was 10 straight playoff appearances, made the NCAA tournament 5 times. We were unlucky in a few games. And then we were in the championship game 3 times. Again, I'm going to say unlucky. Maybe I didn't do a good enough coaching job, but we had great performances by our guys, and I was really proud of them. And we won 5 division, Eastern Division championships over some very, very good teams. And then went on from there for the rest of my career there, really. It just kind of built on itself. The players that we got, we were able to get and coach them. We coached them. And here's back to our conversation again, Matt. 4 years. You know, I had no transfers in 21 years. None. And that, to me, is a sign that, you know, kids would come in sometimes. Coach, I'm unhappy with my playing time. I'm sorry about that. What can we do? You know, can you play better? Can we try this? Well, how can I get more playing time? I said, that's my decision. I'm the coach. Now, if you'd like me to call somebody for you, you did this the right way, I'd be glad to pick up the phone and call a school that you're interested in. Let me know. That rarely happened. And we never lost guys. But I think we were honest with them. And even guys that like last, a couple weeks ago, Matt, I'm out. And I had a young man named Oliver Chamberlain play for me for 2 years. He was from Philadelphia Community College. He happened to be Wilt's nephew. And Oliver came to school, walked on. He's a decent player at community college. He played a little bit for us. Not a lot, but he just enjoyed the program so much. We went out to lunch the other day over here at Tavola's in Springfield. And he just talked about what a great time we had. He enjoyed playing for me and this and that. He had one game for us that he turned the game around. Won the game in a big game down the stretch. And we talked about that. I mean, but guys liked playing in the program, not because of me, but because of, I think, the culture of it, of the program. And the kind of kid we brought in was a solid, solid person. They graduated. And just to tell you a stat that I'm immensely proud of, we've got 100% graduation rate in our program. Now, you don't find that. You know, and I learned that from her back in the day, too. Another thing, he wanted good kids. He wanted to coach good kids. Dick, this is what we look for in a kid. We want this kid, you know, and then we stayed with them and they academically succeeded. And you can see the feedback he's had in his program over the 40, 50 years he coached because of the players he had, the class of person. And I tried to do the similar type of thing at Westchester. I learned that lesson. And it came out that, yeah, the academics is important, guys. You got to get your degree. I'm not going to have you on the team if you're not going to class, if you're not doing this, if you're not being a good citizen in college. Yeah, sure, kids getting scraped once in a while, but not to the point where, you know, you have to worry about it every day. You know, they knew what they were responsible for being part of the program.
How do you feel from the start of your head coaching career to the end? Where did you change the most? Was there a facet or the way you approached, did you really change a lot? Or do you think you were pretty much the same type of coach at the beginning as you were at the end?
Wow. I think I was basically consistent during my coaching career with the way I handled situations. I think maybe a little, as I got older, less emotional with bad things that happened and things that you needed to correct. Okay, this is a thing we have to take care of today. You know, this is an issue that we need to take. I always took losses very hard, personally, in whatever sport I was coaching. And I think I learned to move on myself, because I always told my players, hey, we got to move on. You know, we're not going to dwell on yesterday's game. And I think I learned to do that a little bit better. I had one quick story for you. It was the beginning of my Westchester career, probably about my third year. And we had a football coach there that had coached for a number of years named John Furlow. I don't know if that name rings a bell with you all. But he was also our boxing coach. We had a boxing club that was fantastic. And they used to practice in the back of our gym. And we had just lost a game. I had utmost respect for Coach Furlow. And I had him in class and everything. So in mid-court, we had lost a game the night before to Millersville. Tough game. It was just one of those games we lost at the buzzer. So I'm standing in mid-court, and I'm really feeling crummy. And practice, the guys are getting ready to warm up. So I'm at mid-court, and I'm kind of twirling my whistle around my finger. And all of a sudden, I've got this hand on my shoulder. Man, now, John Furlow was a big man, strong man, football guy. And he'd just come out of the boxing room. He comes up and puts his hand on the shoulder like this. He goes, your body language stinks. So I said, Coach, you had a rough game last night, didn't you? I said, yeah, really, really tough game. Well, your players see it, and they see how you're going to enter practice. So clean it up. With this, he turns around and walks back I'm standing there. I'm thinking, damn, he's right. He, my body language stinks right now. And my players know it. And boy, did I learn a lesson from that. And just the respect I had for him that, yeah, you know, your body language means a lot. And I think sometimes during a game, early on in my career, I would be too, my body language was not all that good. You know, maybe a call or, you know, maybe a player did something wrong. And that times was bad. It was bad and emotional, more emotional than it was intentionally to be bad. You know, I think that improved as I moved on.
Would you say you preferred practice or games more as a coach? Specifically, let's talk basketball. Did you prefer practice or games?
In basketball? Well, any of them. I would say I love the excitement of game day. That was something special, waking up, knowing you have a game. I was a big workout guy before games. I would get my nervous energy. I would run. I would jump rope. And I would do something here at home and ready to go and play our afternoon game or night game, whatever it was. On the road, we were always busy getting to practice and getting scheduled. But I always had to work. Exercise saved me as far as my sanity was concerned. And it got me ready to play. You know, got me ready as a coach. I love practice too, because I love when other coaches came to watch, because I as a coach, I always went to other people's practices and I loved what they did and watched. I learned something from everybody. We were talking about Jay Wright earlier. I went to one of Villanova's practices one time, Matt, and I had known Jay since he was 11 years old. He actually came to our camp in the Poconos when he was at Council Rock. And Herbert and I tried to recruit him a little bit, but he went to Bucknell. But we had stayed friends over the years. And I was at Jay's practice. And I was at Westchester for a number of years by that time. And but I always tried to see somebody before our season to learn something. And I wanted to watch Jay's, you know, his way he broke a press and a lot of things he did. Not complicated, but very good. So he came up to see me before practice. Dick, how you doing? I'm good, Jay. You know, you don't mind? Oh, no, you're welcome. Come on. you know, to sit down. You know, as Jay always was. So I stayed for probably about 45 minutes, made a couple notes. So I get up and I'm getting to leave. I'm getting ready to leave. And Jay blows a whistle. He goes, "Coach, come over here." So I go over and he brings the team around. He goes, "I want you to meet the guy that I met years ago, and he recruited me for them, and he's doing a great job at Westchester. And I, you know, I just wanted to bring him over before he came over to see a practice today." What a class thing to do, you know, and I'm trying to do that. We had a lot of people come to our practices too, high school coaches and so forth. And I always try to involve them in it because it makes them feel like, you know, they're out there learning. I mean, there's something you always know about the game that you need more to know more of. I mean, my wife will tell you, I would sit watching a game on TV at home, and I've had a pad there. And that's an out. Look at that out of bounds play. Boom, boom, boom. Let me write that down. Maybe I'll put it in. You're always thinking, and practices. I love practice too, because it was just start, make it meaningful. Again, learned a lot through her about how to run a practice. And my own ideas also interjecting in my own program, but keep it going. You know, the practice was great. We never had a dull time. We kept going from thing to thing to thing. And one of the things about practice for basketball and really baseball too, it was similar. Coaches would come and say, "Could I have a copy of your practice schedule?" You know, because they want to follow it along. And I never used practice schedules, Matt. I did it on the fly. I mean, it was, I want to go here. I want to go here right now. I mean, it seemed like when you look at it, it was really organized, you know, bang, 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 bang. We're here, there, but it came here. Like I don't want to do this. I don't want to look at a clipboard. I don't want to spend 5 minutes looking at, well, we're going to do this, this. It just seems like it flowed for me. And one of my assistants named Roy Blumenthal was a good guy that had been a great coach over the years. People used to ask him, "What are you going to do in practice today?" And Roy goes, "I don't know. Screw off his head and he'll let you know." Because that's the way I follow it, because he doesn't tell me. Like, I just follow him and, yeah, we know what we're going to do. But that was practice for me. And games, I think it was kind of helped you a little bit too as a coach, because you have to do a lot of things spontaneously as a coach. And you don't have a lot of time to think it out and so forth. So maybe that's just the way my brain worked as a coach, wanted to be a coach all my life.
So could you have imagined the success, the relationships, the fun, the games, like when you started coaching? Like, could you have imagined the road you have traveled back when this started 50 some odd years ago?
No, I didn't. I did not. I always knew I wanted to be in athletics. I mean, you know, when you grow up, people ask you, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" And living in a suburb of New York, we had the Yankees, the Giants, and the Brooklyn Dodgers like half an hour away. And my heroes were the Dodgers. You know, Duke Snider, I was a center fielder. Well, Duke Snider was a center fielder. But when people ask me, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" I said, "I want to be the center fielder for the Brooklyn Dodgers or Mickey Mantle. I want to be, you know, okay, yeah. What do you want to be when you grow up?" That's what I want to be. I'm going to be in athletics. I'm going to be a professional athlete. No. So, okay, if I can't do that, I want to be a coach. Because I was also really fortunate to have some high school coaches that just were wonderful to me. I had gone through a pretty serious physical problem when I was 11 or 12 years old. I had a condition that made my hips come out of the ball socket joint. So at that time, I had to have surgery and have them pinned in. They actually pinned them in and make your ball and socket joint whole again so you could work and walk. I mean, not talk about playing sports, but just function. Well, it was a motivating thing for me. "Oh, you're not going to be able to do this anymore. You're not going to be able to do this anymore." Well, I did. And that was before the days of a lot of therapy and things like that. But I had a couple coaches, especially my baseball coach, who actually was a teacher of mine when I was in elementary school and knew I had some athletic ability. And then when I got injured and had these things done, he kind of was there for me to pick me up and say, "You're going to play for me someday. Don't worry. You're going to get better." And I had his wife as a teacher also, and she was the same way. And great parents, wonderful parents that just encouraged me. My dad was a former athlete, and my mother was a wonderful, wonderful woman that encouraged me. "When you get over this, you get your healing done." It took 2 years. I didn't play anything from when I was 11 to 13 years old. And then I just went after it. And they didn't hold me back. Oh, don't be careful with this stick. You're going to get hurt again. And the doctors were like, you're good. And this was kind of like a revolutionary type surgery. You don't know if these pins are going to. The one thing it did do, it went to the growth plates. And I am maybe 1 or 2 inches smaller than I should be. But it was a motivating factor to me. Nobody is going to tell me I can't do something. And especially in the field that I want to do it in. I don't want to do anything else. I want to be around ball. I want to play. You know, right then I want to play. If I can't play, I want to coach. And they were the people that turned it around for me, my high school people, and then pointed me in the right direction of where to go to have these dreams fulfilled at a college that was a match for me. I remember walking across Westchester with my dad that day. I was there 60 years ago, 1964, we visited. And I said, I want to come here. This sounds right. This feels right, Dad. This feels right. And I was good. Yeah, I think it'd be a great place for you. I really like the people you met today, and you have a chance to play, and you want to be a coach. That's good. I'm glad it worked. And that's really kind of the whole story about how, you know, I never wanted to do anything else, but they're an interest. I mean, it's a pickup game. I'm there, you know, at the school at home. You know, I'm out in the driveway shooting baskets. I'm practicing my swing. You know, I have a goal in the yard. I'm shooting balls, you know, for soccer. So it's just the way I, you know, was brought up and what I always wanted. And no, I did not ever think that it could get to this level.
Dick Delaney, this was wonderful. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Hey, Matt, it's great talking to you. Thanks.
And that will do it for this episode of One-on-One with Matt Leon, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. Want to thank Dick Delaney, former Westchester University head men's basketball coach, for being our guest this week. Now, if you like the show, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, do us a favor, leave us a rating and a review. You can follow the show on X at One-on-One Pod. You can follow me there as well at MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next time when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.